Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome back our mental guru, Dr. Bob Winters, the Confidence Doctor, to help you improve your expectations. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad to be along. This hour, our doctor is in. Yes, Dr. Bob Winters joins us this hour, and we were talking off a little bit before we went going on the air, and he brings up your spirit. There's no question about that, and we're certainly pleased to have him on with us. He's our mental guru, longtime contributor to the show, and we always appreciate those kind of people. Super excited as well because Jim McLean, the renowned instructor Jim McLean, is scheduled to come on next week's show. So not to take any shine away from the good doctor, Jimmy Mack makes things happen in and around the golf world. But we're talking more about the swing next week, although Jim has a new book out, which is not about the swing. So it'll be a phenomenal conversation he and I will have, which we always have phenomenal conversations with this hour's guest. We'll get to the mental side of the game, but also some of the resume that you may have heard about on this show from our guest, All-American in college, a successful junior player, and a guy who was very close to making it out on the big tour, and then somewhere along the line found his brain and said, "What am I doing?" And let me start studying the brain, and you know, and such. But I'll let the good doctor tell you all about it. We welcome the Confidence Doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. How's that for an intro? I can't do much better than that, Doc.
Well, I tell you what, you've got, you know, all these other people. You've got Jimmy McLean, you know, coming in. And, you know, I've always, you know, been a fan of Jimmy McLean. And let me tell you, it's a funny story. Since you mentioned Jim, a few years ago, we were doing a great big session up at the Villages up, you know, north of Orlando. You know, one of the world's premier 55 and over adult, you know, communities. And it's a fantastic place. I don't even know really what they have now. I think they might have 25 different golf courses up there, but it's just an unbelievable way of life for people who have actually, you know, worked their whole life, want to retire, but still not give up a very athletic and active lifestyle. Okay. And so I was doing a session, you know, doing the Dr. Bob Winters, the Confidence Doctor session, and I followed Jim McLean. And Jimmy was, you know, our Saturday morning opening show, and he went from like 9 to 10. And from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, it was Dr. Bob Winters. And then after me, it was Annika Sorenstam. And then after her, it was Greg Norman. So I thought that was a pretty nice, you know, nice lineup right there. So what I was really, you know, excited about is that just over to my left, when I was actually going into my pitch and doing my thing, there was Jimmy Mack over, you know, at the corner at the left, just sitting there and kind of had like a little notebook, just kind of taking notes and watching, you know, Dr. Bob work. And right in the middle of, you know, my presentation, Greg Norman came down in his helicopter and hovered about 200 feet over me on, you know, the stage. And we're now talking here at the Polo Grounds at the Villages, and we must have had, I'm assuming we might have had, you know, maybe 1,000 to maybe 1,500 people right here in the stands. We're actually delivering, you know, this podium right in front of this great big grandstands. And so here was Norman in his green helicopter hovering over me, and I'm sitting here going, "Hey," I said, "just wait till, you know, he gets on stage and I'll have my helicopter and I'll actually hover over him." Well, you know, the crowd thought that was pretty funny, but, and so did Jimmy Mack over here on the left. But, you know, what are you going to do, right? You know, here you got the, you know, the great white shark, you know, trying to interfere with your, with your presentation. But that's really, you know, what I remember most about Jimmy, because he was over and he's always been very, very generous to me and been very complimentary. So I'm going to give it right back to him. So I'm glad you're having him on the show. Hey, really great to be with you. And so how are you, my friend?
Not too bad. You know, you intrigued me with that foursome because everybody but Norman's been on this show, although I've talked with him offline before. But that would be quite a foursome. I mean, you got two All-Americans and two well, Jimmy's in the Hall of Fame too. So, you know, I mean, but playing Hall of Famers. Greg kind of – you kind of summed it up with Greg Norman right there, the ultra-personality guy. Right. Jim McClain is about as low key as you can get. Nice, easygoing guy from the Pacific Northwest originally. Obviously, he has schools all over the world now. And he's spent a lot of his time, although he bought a new place in Seattle, I think, last year. So he's back and forth. But spends a lot of time in Biltmore and it is Florida, Miami area schools. And he is just, even though he's so unassuming and the top of his game and Golf Digest doesn't even list him as best instructors anymore. He and Butch Harmon are like emeritus. So, you know, Butch took exception that he wasn't listed. But, you know, talking to the guys at Golf Digest, they're like, well, because they're on the list every year, you know. So we just made him a kind of, you know, ongoing, just a given, the legends, that type of thing. Because Jim was an All-American at Houston Houston was a powerhouse. And, you know, people don't always know that about him because he's a very successful player, and he was on a team with different teams in Houston with a lot of guys that went on to be successful on the PGA Tour and win major events and things like that. But Jim is so he's just so low key. You would never know that this was the Jim McClain that's been so successful teaching the game of golf, which Toski will tell you is not an easy thing to do.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about that here, you know, Jim, he goes off, you know, then he's got, you know, the confidence doctor. He's got me after him. So how low key he is, most people say I'm, you know, Mr. Positive, Mr. Passion, pretty dynamic. You know, that's what I see. And you've got then Annika after me, and she's pretty vanilla. You know, she's very entertaining, very sweet. And then you got Greg Norman. So you had kind of a sawtooth. You had kind of low, getting high, then kind of low, kind of high, you know, kind of that sawtooth right there. So it presented to the folks there at the Villages a really nice mix. And I got to tell you, it was one of the very best days. And I can tell you that when I handed my microphone, you know, to Annika, and she was up there, and I watched her for a little while, watching her, and she's sitting there, and she had some microphone problems. She looked over at me and she goes, "Dr. Bob," and she goes, "I think you blew up, you know, the microphone." She goes, I think you out talked the microphone. And so, you know, Annika made a little jab at me, a little jokey there. But what a fantastic, you know, assemble of people, you know, to be around. So I was very humbled and very honored to be among that group. But you talk about, you know, Toski. I always want to tell this story because I don't know if the listeners understand Bob Toski and your relationship with the mouse, but back in about 1985, and we had the PGA show here, and they would go to the different places like the Wyatt and the Peabody after, before it was really, you know, became so super huge. And I remember I showed up there one day, right at happy hour, and here was the mouse. And Bob Toski with maybe about 35 different PGA professionals. But at the time, there was Rod and Richard Garle, the very well-known twins, the architects, golf course architects. And I befriended them, and I got a drink, and I introduced myself to Rod and introduced me to his brother at that time. And so I heard Bob Toski. I'd never met him before. So he was talking, and he was talking to a circle of players. And he was really holding court. And finally, he was asking, you know, "No, you don't know what the sand hell you're talking about. You don't know." And then all of a sudden, he turns around and looks at me. And you have to understand, you know, my hair was really big and, you know, pretty blonde. And I think I kind of stood out, you know. And he looked at me. And he goes, "Let me ask you, young man." He goes, "Let me tell you. Do you play the game?" I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Is golf a left-sided game or a right-sided game?" He goes, and I looked at him and go, "It's neither one." He goes, "Well, what do you mean it's neither one?" I go, it's it's not just left-sided, it's right-sided, but the left side, you know, swings and the right side adds muscular thrust. I said, golf is a full body. It's left side, right side, all of it. And he looks at me, he goes, are you an educator? You know, are you a player? I said, used to be. He goes, well, I'll tell you one thing. You're the only damn person in this group that knows what the hell he's talking about. You know, and that sort of made me an instant hero right there of all these people, right?
Right.
Go, Who is this guy? You know, and so obviously I introduced myself to him. I'm Bob Totzke. I said, well, I know who you are. You know, it's really good. And I said, you're 125 pounds of, absolute, fury. I said, you could hit the ball 300 yards. He goes, and not many people hit the ball as far as I do, being only 125 pounds. And that just seemed to really, ignite him. That really seemed to really light him up. He thought that was fantastic because I knew who he was. I knew how far he could hit the ball because of such a being of diminutive size. And he could, this was the day of Bolada balls and persimmon woods. And Chichi Rodriguez, Bob Tosca. These guys were really little, but they could really move it. Right.
Right.
So my whole background was, a lot, on these different type players, but that's, think about all the years that have passed. And now here I am in 2026 with, Keith Jones, tee it up with Keith Jones. And we've been together for 20, 25, almost 30 years, I believe. It's been a nice run, my friend.
Well, we're going to try to keep it going as long as we can, Doc. Let me tell you, it's great to have done this show. I'm very, very proud of the longevity of this show, but it's still my guest list that I'm most proud of. And I had no idea when the president of the network came to me and said, you want to do a show? And I said, sure. And he said, I said, what should I do it on? And he said, why don't you do it on golf? And from that point forward, back in March of 1998, we've been gathering up and staying strong. And just the most I got out of this show, and I try to learn something every show, and I hope that the listeners get an opportunity to do that, especially with you. It's one of the reasons you've been an integral part, because you bring so much to the show with all your knowledge. And I know you spread it around as much as you can and do your talks and such. So, that's always appreciated, because that continues to legitimize who Dr. Bob Winters is. And, people, it's what's the saying these days? If you know, you know. And that's pretty much kind of sums you up that way. And I didn't even pull up Dr. Bob Winters on the computer today. I just went straight to the confidence doctor, and guess who popped up? It was easier to get you that way than it was Dr. Bob Winters, from that standpoint. But that's great. But also, as I was looking at the question that was posed by the computer was how to gain confidence as a doctor. And I don't know why that's there. That's interesting. But number one is be introspective. A good physician should always be self-aware. This is you. Know your weaknesses and work to improve them. During these personal growth times, think about your weaknesses. That's you. Keep learning. That's definitely you. Avoid an unsavory alter ego. And I don't know that you got an ego in there somewhere, because you were a darn good player at the highest levels. And then set relational goals, and then the conclusion from that standpoint. But that kind of summed up our conversation that we've had in the past and who you are as a person. And I know I'm leaving some other good qualities out there, but I found it interesting, kind of almost intriguing, that they would say that about a physician, and you have that same extended bedside manner, except your bed is out there on the green grass.
Well, I would say, what did they say? What was the question that AI asked? What was the question again?
Well, it wasn't AI. It was on the computer. But let's revisit that when we come back from this break, because our first segment went by so fast. But Dr. Bob Winters, don't worry. He's spending the hour with us. We'll be back on Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
Hi, this is Jim McLean. You're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. We'll be right back.
All
All
right, before we went to the break, Doc was asking about the computer that when I did a lookup for the Confidence Doctor, and the it was actually, it wasn't AI. Thank goodness, it was already there. And now AI could have created it at some point, and you know, we're letting the robots take over the world, but stop right now. But it said,
sure.
How to gain confidence as a doctor, question mark. And it's
okay,
interesting because
it was one
of the first things under Confidence Doctors. Confidence Doctor, and then people also ask, are confidence coaches worth it? And then how to gain confidence as a doctor.
Well, how to gain confidence as a doctor is, first of all, you got to have a lot of patience. that's the play on words.
Bravo,
right there.
Bravo. Yeah, there he is. Really? See, stand up. He must have a microphone in front of him. Here we go.
Yeah,
you give the guy a microphone and he takes off.
Yeah, next week I'm at the Holiday Inn Express in Joliet, Illinois. So, yeah, I'm going to be working the room there. No, here's the point. This week, you know, my hero, my wonderful, I always say it's kind of like, I wasn't like a godfather to me, but he was just, I always, you know, saw him. He always knew who I was and, you know, recognized the face and the hair and always gave me thumbs up. But then again, you know, one of my really good friends was like his business manager whose, you know, office was only two doors down, you know, at the club from him. So when I would go visit my friend, I would actually, you know, see Arnie and kind of pop my head in and give me a thumbs up. But in that, you know, vein, I want to tell the story about Arnold because, I had told, you know, my good friend, and I said, I want you to give Arnold this book. And it was Mistake-Free Golf at the time. And of all the people I didn't ask Arnold that. So I stopped by and G said, hey, he goes, hey, you know, Dr. Bob would like to say hi. So I popped in and Arnold goes, hey. And I said, I looked on, you know, his desk and I said, that's a great book right there. And he looked, he goes, yeah, I said, hey, I have one with me that I want you to sign for me. And he looked at me, he goes, yeah, he goes, I saw this, The Mental Mistakes. He goes, how come I'm not in here? And I go, because I made a lot of mental mistakes. And I go, Arnold, I said, I would have asked you. He goes, oh, my, I could have had, you know, two or three chapters, all the mental mistakes I made. And so I looked at him and I said, well, what do you think, you know, was your greatest mental mistake? And he looked at me and he said, oh, he goes, I think maybe I went, you know, for a few pins where I shouldn't have and maybe played too boldly that I shouldn't have. And he looked at me, he goes, what do you think about that? And I go, I think, you know, you wouldn't be Arnold Palmer, the Charger, if you didn't play that way. I said, that was your style, you know, go for broke. I said, you know, you really thought and you believed you could do it. I said, Nicholas, you know, was the high percentage guy, but you weren't that guy. I said, think of all the tournaments that you say that you might have won, but look at all the tournaments that you won, even like the 60 U.S. Open at Cherry Hills. You got mad at Bob Drum, you know, the sports writer, and you said, the hell, you know, don't. 65, we know, wins tournaments, so I'm going to shoot a 65. And you went out and you drove the first green there at Cherry Hills. And I said, You were Arnold Palmer and you played, you know, your game, swing your swing. You played your game. You were true to yourself. I said, you know, so you should be very proud of that. I said, that is no mental mistake. In fact, that's just trusting your talent. And he looked at me and he goes, and he kind of gave me a big smile and looked at me. He goes, well, I've looked at all these mental mistakes. I said, and then he looked at me and he goes, what do you think? You wrote the book. What do you think the biggest mental mistake is? And I looked him dead in the eye and I said, Arnie, I said, the biggest mental mistake people have is not buying this book. And he looked at me and he gave me a big thumbs up. He goes, well, that's a pretty damn good one right there. Yeah, you got to buy the book. You know? So one of my most favorite memories, you know, I had a chance to play with him and talk to him like in his office, but I had a chance to play with him and just tell him how much, you know, I appreciated him as a person, as a role model and somebody I grew up with. And I mean, even to this day, I know that Ricky Fowler got, you know, the Palmer Award this year and he was kind of very emotional kind of getting it because at that time, many years ago, when young Ricky, you know, went into Bay Hill Club and Lodge, one of, you know, Mr. Palmer's, one of his rules was no hats, gentleman, no hats on in the clubhouse. And Ricky was going in, and he didn't really know the rules. And Arnold sees him over there, and he goes, "Hey, come on over." And Rick comes over, and he says, "Yes, Mr. Palmer." He goes, "How are you?" And, you know, Arnold says, "I'm good. You liking the tournament?" He goes, "Loving it, loving the course." He goes, "I like your hat." And he had, you know, that Puma hat on, you know, that orange pea. Mm. And he says, "You like it?" He says, "I'd like it a hell of a lot more if you would take it off inside the clubhouse." He looked at him and goes, "Oh, yes, sir." And he took it off.
With Dr. Bob Winters, we'll be back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee. What am I giving the driver? He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
Welcome back to the show as we were discussing a very interesting topic before we went to the break.
Every young player realizes the value, you know, of just some great gentle person traditions. And one of those is, you know, standing up, you know, when someone enters a room, you know, taking your hat off, you know, going into the clubhouse, just some, you know, time honored traditions that I just think make Bay Hill week this a fantastic week. But I got to tell you, when he would drive around, you know, here during the tournament, and he sometimes would have, you know, his wife with him, he'd have, you know, his dog, his golden retriever, you know, on him. And people would just stop, and he just loved the people. That was the whole point. And as I look back on my career, I can say honestly, of all the people I look up to and really love, I mean, really love and admire. I mean, he was a man's man. He was, you know, people loved him, all sorts of people, all, you know, all shapes and sizes. But he just loved people, loved being around them. He made people feel good about themselves. And I can say that, you know, for a fact. People loved Arnold Palmer. They truly, truly, you know, learned to really love Jack, but not the same way that they loved Arnie. And Jack, you know, knew that. And people always talk about, you know, they're so crazy about Tiger or whatever. People respected Tiger. They respected his skills. But to me, it's on a different visceral spiritual love, you know, than they have for Arnold. Arnold is just, it's amazing. He was the king. He always will be the king. And he really brought, you know, something very special to the game. And that's really sort of how I, you know, sort of learned to play when I was younger. You know, I sort of, you know, went to the Arnold Palmer Golf Academy back in 1971 before I went to college. First day I was there, I locked my keys inside my car. I probably told this story before, but I borrowed some clubs, and the first day on the golf course, I got a hole in one with a driver on a par three that was 215 yards up the hill. Have I told you that story before?
I don't know that you have. Go ahead, expound a little bit. We're talking to Dr. Bob Winters on Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
Yeah, you know, so I locked my keys inside my car, and one of the college staff members who played for Yale, he was the captain of the Yale golf team. His name was Bodie Marks, a great, big, strapping, blonde guy, about 6'2", 6'3", gave me some Ben Hogan clubs. And these Ben Hogan clubs are way too big for me. I was a little guy. I was only about 5 foot, only 95 pounds. And went back to the very back tees on number 11 there at Stratton Mountain Country Club, which was a Jeffrey Cornish design. And I stepped up, and we had played in foursomes. We had 125 boys in this three-week golf school. It was one of the very first academies, you know, at that time. And it was state-of-the-art, had a beautiful practice facility there at Stratton Mountain, unbelievable practice facility. And even back in 1971, they had something called these shutter cameras that could actually capture, you know, maybe 35 different positions of the swing. They even had a video motion machine, like a videotape recorder, back in 1971, you know, some really cool, big time stuff. And I stepped up on that tee, hit the ball, and the group up there on the green was kind of waving us through. They all went crazy because the ball went in the hole. That was the first day. And about 3 weeks later, I ended up winning, you know, one of the flights, the boys' championship. And Arnold Palmer gave me two of my trophies that, you know, as I sit here in my office talking to you, I'm looking at these two trophies. They're the only two trophies I really have in my office. And Arnold both, you know, handed them to me. He asked me, he said, Bob, he goes, you know, is it true you made a hole in one with the driver? And I go, yes, sir, I did. And he said, you know, I've never made a hole in one with the driver. How's that feel? And I said, it feels really, really good. And he goes, I damn well should. You know, that's fantastic, you know. And he just gave me that big Arnie grin. So that's sort of really what has, you know, created, you know, sort of this, I mean, this lifelong love affair with giving back to people, I think, because I was so enamored, you know, with the king at that time. Obviously, I am no Arnold Palmer, but I don't think I'm chipped beef either, you know. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm doing some pretty good stuff and helping a lot of people. And, you know, speaking about that, I was on, you know, with Tim Hall, a wonderful mental coach from West Palm Beach, comes from Australia, and Dr. Rick Sessinghouse, Colin Morikawa's coach, mental coach, physical coach. And he and I have become really, really good friends. I've become part of his new flow code. We're actually taking the mental game to, you know, people all over the world. So, yeah, so it's working out, Dr. Rick and Dr. Bob. So you've got Dr. Flow and you got Dr. Confidence. So we always talk about flowing with confidence. So that's what we're doing now. So we're sort of the, you know, ambassadors spreading the sunshine, the good news gospel, if you will, of golf to all these golfers around the world. So that's sort of what we're doing right now. We had a wonderful golf technology seminar at Reunion Resort, Keith. And I tell you what, you would have really enjoyed it. A lot of great speakers. And even, you know, my colleague and great friend David Ledbetter, he was there. He was talking about all his experiences and technology and, you know, where it's going and things like that. So it was just a wonderful thing. So it's been, you know, really good. I've been busy, had a lot of great success with all of my students. So I don't know, you know, if you've been keeping up with some of my social media and some of my posts, but boy, we've got a lot of people that are winning, just not on the big tours, but, you know, out here on college tours and these junior tours. And boy, there's a lot of college tournaments going on right now because it's almost spring break for a lot of the colleges.
Well, you're a lot to keep up with. I mean, socially speaking, it's good that you show things, you post things, as the saying goes, and let people in on it because it's very important. I mean, people that are listening to this show right now are getting you're getting this for free right now because Doc usually is very, very, very expensive and very, very exclusive because he only has so many hours in the day. So the fact that he's making one of those hours with us, so we always appreciate that. But it helps get it out to, let's say, the masses. But, you know, every person is an individual. Your game is different. And the whole idea is to get your mind in the right space. So when you go out, you can enjoy the game. You can play the game efficiently and effectively. And that's what it's all about, right?
Well, it is. And let's talk about that because I want to, you know, give, you know, sort of this hour or whatever we have of it. And talk about, we've got a lot of people who have been up north, been preparing their game, you know, getting their golf games ready. We want to make sure we get their minds right. And one of the first things, you know, I've been talking about now for, you know, several weeks to a lot of my different professionals is the whole notion about, okay, all of us have maybe delusions of grandeur. We have big, big expectations, okay? Expectations about how we want things to happen. And so I've been talking about what are expectations, especially around golf. And people go, well, are expectations a good thing? You know, are they a bad thing? Well, there are good expectations and there are bad expectations. But I kind of want to just kind of give the philosophy of what expectations are. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So, all right. You ready to go? I don't want to, you know, get, you know, caught up right here when we have to go.
No, we got some time. I'm glad you did mention that you're conscious of that. So they see he's conscious as well as confident. So that's very, 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 very important.
Well, but, we talk about having awareness, you know, and, you know, having self-awareness. And I know so much because, you know, we always talk about, oh, we don't want to get, you know, caught here. So I want to talk about this, the whole notion about what an expectation is, as far as we talk about performance. So when people talk about expectations, like they have an expectation of going out to a wonderful, fancy restaurant, already in their mind, they have set a standard for what that restaurant should be. So an expectation, and I want people to understand this, it's a preset standard of performance that suggests that something you aspire for or want to achieve in the future, well, this is what I want to have happen. It could happen, and it might happen, or it should happen, but it's going to happen in the way that I've imagined it in my mind. I see it happening this way. So here's the point. When we go out to a restaurant, and it's supposed to be, oh, well, it has a great reputation. So these restaurants, these chefs, they have to live up to this reputation, right? So whether you're a Michelin one-star, two-star, three-star, you know, restaurant, or you're just a restaurant that has a great local reputation, there's a preset standard of the food service, the quality of the food, the ambiance, the atmosphere. And here's the point. When that evidence-based reality, when the outcome, you know, how your meal was, doesn't equal or match your imagined expectation, there's a gap there. There's an expectation gap there. And a lot of people go, well, I wasn't that good. I was really kind of disappointed, right? And that happens so much, you know, for golfers, because we have a preset standard of this is the way my golf game is supposed to be. We even set expectations for how we're going to warm up. And based on how we warm up is the expectation for the round. How many times has you or any of our listeners gone out and had a great, great pre-round warm-up, really striping it on the range, and then we get off to the golf course, and then it just goes somewhere. It goes away. We play terrible. And we felt great on the first tee. So what we have to understand is feelings, affect, or even just the way we warm up doesn't really necessarily guarantee, you know, good results on the golf course. So that's the problem with expectations. And we have a lot of, you know, expectations. But the key point I want people to understand, if your actual result or outcome about what you want in your golf does not match or equal your expectation, a person becomes frustrated, angry, discouraged, disappointed, and depressed. And so many people have the wrong type of expectations. So we're going to go into the negative expectations, and I want to talk about some positive expectations. All right? So if I ask Keith Jones, when you go out to go play, and you haven't played for a while, well, what's an expectation that you have?
Expectation, it depends on how much I've ramped up. If I haven't played for a while, but I've practiced a little bit, then I feel a little bit like it won't take as long to get my game back to decent shape. If I haven't, if I've been dormant, then it's going to take quite a little bit longer. So my expectation is hopefully go out, make good contact with the ball, and try to get it in the hole, which is the ultimate prize.
Right. So your expectation isn't so much on the total outcome or score or whatever, but so many people do. So here are some expectations which impede or hurt, you know, somebody's performance. And most of these negative expectations, all right, start off with these words. I must be perfect. I have to be perfect. I should be perfect. I should be hitting the golf ball this way. So these, what we call modal verbs of necessity, obligation, or even opinion, I must, you know, par this first hole, or I have to make this putt. So many people we suffer from the tyranny of the shoulds. You know, I should be better than this. I can't believe I'm playing this bad. So I just kind of want to go through, you know, a little list of the negative expectations, and you can kind of stop me when I'm hitting those for you. Okay.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So you understand what we're talking about, expectations now, because if you understand it, our listeners will understand it. Okay.
Okay. Okay. We have some very, very intelligent listeners, so I'll go with that.
Fantastic. Well, the first expectation is, it's about the expectation of having a perfect swing. All right. Even bigger than that is the expectation of, I've got to have everything perfect. Right. And we all know that golf is not a game of perfect. It is a game of confidence, but it's also a game of learned effectiveness. So when a person says, this is what I've got to do, I've got to be perfect, they're already setting themselves up for a less than good performance, because anything they do will come short of that perfection. And that's when you have a distorted perfectionist, because nothing that they do, no matter how well they play, is good enough. And even if you say, no, that was a great shot, they go, well, that's the way it should be, because I've been putting in so much time. Have you ever played with a perfectionist like that, Keith?
Probably. I try to stay in my own lane, in my own game. And thank goodness Doc has been here to try to direct me in that direction.
Well, I mean, there's so many times, you know, when you have a person say that you're hitting shots, you know, down the fairway, or you're hitting shots close, and maybe you outdrove this person by about maybe 5 to 10 yards, but this person's been long off the tee all day. And then as you're walking down and you're just trying to make some nice social chit chat, you go, wow, we both hit our drives really big today. What does the perfectionist say? Or the person with the massive ego? They go, I didn't hit mine that well. I healed mine a little bit. I towed it out there. You know, there's no, hey, yeah, that was a big drive you just hit. No, there's always some type of excuse pattern put in there, right? So that's one of the first expectations. You know, I have to play perfect golf. I've got to be perfect. Everything's got to be just right. And the problem, you know, with this perfectionistic expectation mindset is that when things don't go right, they get upset. They actually walk off the golf course, and they're going to go to the practice range, and they're going to beat themselves up. They will hit balls until they get it almost perfect again, and they go back out, and they actually do the cycle, which is a negative cycle. You know, they'll go back out and get themselves frustrated again, and it just keeps going on and on and on. And I see this quite a bit, you know, in my work. Now, the second expectation is the expectation of, I want to shoot a certain score, or I need, you know, to actually finish high here on the leaderboard. You know, and another expectation that comes in with that is the expectation of, I have to qualify here for my club championship, or I've got to shoot this certain score. So instead of actually expecting to give great effort into each and every shot, they're now starting to become counters, totalers. They're thinking about the results. They're thinking about the outcome. They're thinking about numbers. And the problem with that type, you know, a golfer, is that they create their own comfort zone jail.
With Dr. Bob Winters, we'll be back to wrap up the show.
Hi, this is Annika Sorensen, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
And we're back for a final segment of the show. The Doc has hit another chord. He is on it, as usual. And I'm never sure which road we're going down, but this control thing is a big deal for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, and I think, you know, as we left off, the expectation of being perfect, the expectation of shooting a certain score or an outcome, it creates this comfort zone. And so many people have this expectation, well, I'm a 10 handicap. Well, they don't really expect to be anything more than a 10 handicap. And anytime they get even lower, or they have the prospect of being way below their handicap, they actually almost sort of sabotage their talent and creatively screw up a couple of holes to get them back to where, oh, that's about it. Yeah, that's where I am. I'm about a 10 handicap. So they, you know, they really can't stand, you know, success really. So they have these expectations of, I've got to qualify, I've got to score. And then there's these other people, the expectation that I must win, or I will win, or I must win because I have the lowest handicap at the course, or I'm expected to play well, or the expectation of, I've got to live up to others' hype, I've got to be able to do all this. So these are the negative expectations that I think, Keith, affect almost 99% of all golfers. They go out with these expectations of score, of playing perfect, of trying to qualify, saying I must win. And the point of it is, if we're trying to live up to other people's expectations, I mean, people really don't care about, you know, what Keith Jones shoots or what he doesn't shoot. So why are we so worried about what other people think about us, right? Because they really don't care anyway. And even if somebody asks you, hey, Keith, what'd you shoot? And you give them a number, right? They don't want to sit here and have a dissertation with you about how you shot your score, right? What they want to talk about is, okay, I cut you by five. Then they go, hey, Thomas, what did you shoot? See, they are done with Keith Jones. They're just asking you because the only reason they ask you that, Keith, is that they're trying to compare themselves, you know, to you. Okay. And it's not about Keith Jones. It's not about you, 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 you. It's about me, 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 me. Okay. So I've got some expectations here, Keith, that will help every one of our listeners and you play better golf this spring. You ready for them?
Ready. Oh, thank goodness. Ready, ready.
Okay. So we know, you know, the negative ones. So let's get to the positive ones. All right. These are the ones. A positive expectation is the way we frame it. It is in the now. It's in the present moment. These are the things that will enhance and give you a great mindset and mood set to play. The first one here is, I expect to have a clear plan for each and every shot I hit. I mean, this right here, I mean, this, folks, if you have a plan, a clear plan for each shot, instead of going into each shot, let's grip it and rip it, or let's just hit and hope, or let's just see where the damn son of a bitch goes. You know, a lot of people play like that, right? So they just step up there and hit it. But if you just really took the time to say, okay, what's my intention here? What is it I really want to do? Where do I want to leave this ball in the fairway? So when you have a clear plan for each and every shot you hit, you now start to strategize. You now set yourself up to say, okay, I'm going to play the game, and I'm going to play very effectively, and I'm going to hit it here, right down the left center of the fairway. Because like John Wood, the great basketball coach, said, if you fail to plan, you're just planning to fail. So I'm always trying to get people to understand, you got to have a plan. That is the first expectation you should have. You should expect to have a very clear and decisive plan, because decisiveness creates confidence. The second expectation is, you can control your effort. You have to give 100% focused effort into this one moment, this one shot. And along with that, you expect to stick to your routine, and this allows flow. This allows the zone to occur. The next expectation is, I expect to be 100% committed to this plan of action. Because if you don't commit to your plan of action, you've already quit. I've always liked, you know, the O.J. Simpson, you know, trial. You know, what was it? Cochran. Johnny Cochran. He said about, you know, the bloody glove. He says, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. All right? I've always said, if you don't commit, you've already quit.
Doc is on fire. He is on fire. And we're just out of time. It is great to have you on as usual. Dr. Bob Winters, my guest on Teed Up with Keith Jones. Get out there and practice your game. mentally as well. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.